Kia ora, welcome to episode 57 of the SWNZ podcast, the podcast for New Zealand Star Wars fans, and our first podcast for 2022. My name is Matt.
And my name is Christy.
It was a huge week for news from a galaxy far, far away, mainly because of a certain Disney Plus series, so let's jump in and talk Star Wars. Although we've got a lot to talk about in terms of the Book of Boba Fett, the rest of the news has been a little bit light because the internet's on a little bit of a holiday for the Christmas season. But let's just start by looking forward to what we can expect out of 2022. We've got the Book of Boba Fett running right now. That's going to be 7 episodes long. And hopefully you've all seen the first episode. We're going to jump in and talk about that in a lot of detail shortly. We've got a lot of other things to look forward to in a lot of different forms of media over the coming year. We are particularly looking forward to the 7.0 update for Star Wars The Old Republic, Legacy of the Sith, due out mid-February. We're expecting the Obi-Wan Kenobi series, 6 episodes long, to start pretty soon after the Book of Boba Fett. We don't have confirmation, but I'll talk about that just briefly, possibly starting in the second quarter of 2022. The long-awaited LEGO Star Wars The Skywalker Saga video game, which has been postponed a number of times, seems to have a semi-solid release date, also in the second quarter of 2022. Bad Batch Season 2, we're expecting about 16 episodes, will be coming sometime probably after Obi-Wan Kenobi, release date to be confirmed. And we know that Andor Season 1, 12 episodes long, will be starting to stream somewhere in the July to September window. Not confirmed, but we're also hopeful that The Mandalorian Season 3 will show up in 2022. Historically, The Mandalorian has started streaming in October to early November. And that may be the case for 2022 if we're lucky, and we're expecting another 8 episodes of that. So all in all, a lot to look forward to for 2022. And as we mentioned in a number of recent podcasts, as well as the stuff that we have confirmed that we're going to be getting this year, we're also looking forward to, just out of interest and because of our ongoing curiosity, we're looking forward to hearing more about other upcoming Star Wars series and movies. First up, we've got a little bit of information about The Acolyte, which, of course, we won't be expecting to see until 2023. That's come through via Production Weekly, the Production Weekly online magazine, which collects together all the information that is available for ongoing productions internationally. And they have information that filming for The Acolyte, which has a working title of Paradox, will begin in May of 2022 in London. So from that point onwards, we may be starting to hear a little bit more information about that series. The information that Production Weekly has describes the series as a female-driven action mystery thriller with martial arts elements that will take us into a galaxy of shadowy secrets and emerging dark side powers in the final days of the High Republic era. That's pretty much all information that we already knew, but I think the main take-home from that reveal is that there's a semi-solid starting date for filming in May 2022. We're also looking very much, of course, to the Obi-Wan Kenobi series, which we suspect is going to be the first out of the sort of Andor, Bad Batch, Obi-Wan Kenobi upcoming titles. And a little bit of information we've got that supports this comes through a tweet from the virtual production supervisor at ILM VFX, who just prior to the premiere episode of The Book of Boba Fett made the following tweet. He said, "One trick with ILM stagecraft is that we're always pushing forward, but it takes a while before the work comes out and audiences get to see what's possible. Tomorrow starts a run of new hotness. You ready?" So he was referring to The Book of Boba Fett, but threw in a number of tags indicating other upcoming titles that have made use of the ILM stagecraft technology. They included The Batman, Thor Love and Thunder, and Obi-Wan Kenobi, which implies that work using the ILM stagecraft technology and pipeline is well underway for Obi-Wan Kenobi, and that gives us hope that that's coming up. Discussion about that in sort of current social media.
Yeah, there's lots of hints, little tidbits around the internet sort of pointing that Obi-Wan Kenobi is, you know, coming, it's on its way and things like that, but I'm sort of resigned to the fact that we probably won't get anything solid until at least after the Book of Boba Fett. Or they might like give us like a little teaser at the end, like the way that they did for the Book of Boba Fett at the end of Mandalorian. They'll wait until that one's finished, and then they'll, you know, give us a tease for the next thing to get excited about.
Yeah, apart from title releases, it seems to be the Disney Plus strategy that they don't hype titles in an overlapping or confusing way. They let us focus on one Star Wars, one Marvel, one Pixar or whatever at a time. And we're expecting that's going to be the way it's going to pan out for Star Wars moving forward.
But it is really interesting to see some big action movies using the stagecraft technology. And from sort of opposing studios, we see Thor Love and Thunder included in this list, and that is of course a Marvel production, but also The Batman, which is obviously from the competing comic book house DC Comics with Warner Brothers. So it's interesting to see sort of how wide and how fast this technology is getting used within the industry, not just for episodic TV series to kind of keep costs down, but also the big budget movies, showing that it can actually stand up to that sort of big budget computer-generated detail.
Yeah. We knew Taika Waititi was using the ILM stagecraft and the volume for his work on Thor, Love and Thunder. And a lot of that was based on his experience and familiarity with the technology because of his work with The Mandalorian. But I wasn't actually aware that The Batman was going to rely on it to this extent as well. So that'll be interesting to see. And it's obviously opening up, being used by some really big titles moving forward. And that's probably only going to just continue to gather momentum, I suspect. It's going to make it a lot easier for some really interesting Star Wars material too, I think.
Back in the original era of George Lucas and Rick McCallum in that prequel era, there was always this heightened expectation that live-action Star Wars TV series weren't too far off, but it kind of got shelved as it got put down to sort of production costs, the way to do movie-level special effects on a TV budget. And I think what we've really seen is that what we were waiting for... We're there now with the likes of stagecraft, the way to do sort of, you know, the big budget effects that you need for a thing like Star Wars, but on a sort of a lower level budget so that you can do constant episodes. Because each of these series is a lot more hours or at least minutes longer than a standard movie. And, you know, without sort of the guarantee of a box office take, you've always got to make sure that you'd be able to do this on a profit. You know, they get paid a certain amount by Disney or whatever the studio is to make a series with the take that they make from streaming services. But obviously that's a limited pool of funds. These streaming services know how much money they're making every month from subscribers and things like that. Box office, sometimes there's a bit of a gamble, you know, is this thing going to blow people out of the water? Is it going to hit that $1 billion mark and make a huge amount of profit so that you can gamble a little bit more on the special effects? Obviously, the Star Wars films always did very well at the box office. So there's always, you could spend a bit more than the average movie because you knew you were going to make more than the average movie. So it's really exciting to finally be in that era. I remember wishing so hard in that early prequel era that we would finally get Star Wars TV series. And it's just, obviously it took a little bit of a while, but sometimes I think waiting for something to be just right is worth the wait.
And yeah, well, that's the thing. It took a lot longer than we maybe would have liked, but the counterpoint to that is if it was rushed, if they weren't able to pull it off because of budget constraints, it may have been dissatisfying. It may have been a little bit of a watered-down version compared to what we would have really liked. Whereas what we've got now, there's a distinction between some of the streaming series and the movies, but that's in a large part because of the way you're trying to tell a story in chapter installments rather than a single 2 to 3 hour hit. The actual special effects are, you know, on par with each other, even with the differences in budget. So, yeah, I'm glad that the technology is there to really support TV series to the level that it is, because you look at some other parallels in other franchises, you know, where they've tried to do big superhero movies before the sort of tech or even writing and approach to superhero movies was really, you know, on point, and they look really bad in comparison. Some of the early iterations of making use of Marvel superheroes before the MCU really got taken off the ground, and they're kind of cringeworthy at the moment. So it would have been a little bit disappointing if we wasted some really good, you know, titles looking at Boba Fett or new characters, you know, historically, and it just hadn't really hit the right mark.
I think we've got to the point where people don't really make a distinction between live-action Star Wars and the big theatrical Star Wars stories, that it's people consume it with the same enthusiasm and that everything sort of feels on par with itself. It's not sort of broken down into tiers. Certainly, we still see a bit of a distinction between things like a Disney Plus series and books and comics. You know, they don't hit the same sort of level of a sort of frenzy and enthusiasm. There are some tremendous books out there and comics, but it's because Star Wars started with the movies, with live action sort of storytelling. I think with that's always going to be where the heart of Star Wars is. And so it's really fun to see just how much we're going to get this year. And oh, I really hope we don't have to wait too much longer to hear something about Kenobi.
I'm sure we won't. And we're recording this and going to publish this on Tuesday. So we're already only down to one day away before the next installment of the Book of Boba Fett. So I think that's really going to keep us distracted over the next little while. Honing down to a much smaller scale, though, just worth mentioning, if you're the sort of Star Wars fan that likes to consume all and every bit of Star Wars that's available, you might be interested to know that there is a new Star Wars Lego short out on the Star Wars Kids YouTube channel. Came out just on the cusp of the new year. It's called New Year's Hoth and Eve, and we'll put a link to it down below. But this is a short 2-minute Empire Strikes Back era clip that in which Luke Skywalker zooms into battle to take on stomping AT-ATs on snowy Hoth as the clock counts down to a celebration. Very lightweight in terms of storytelling, but I think in many ways it's a bit of an advert for the new AT-AT Lego sets, which look very cool in real life and look quite cool in this CG style as well. Yeah, that's just another little bit of content that's come out that you might be interested in checking out. And finally, on a local level, on the SWNZ YouTube channel, we take another look at a unique New Zealand Star Wars collectible in a video. We're specifically looking recently at the Irvine's New Zealand Twinkies Empire Strikes Back stickers, which came out in late 1980 and through 1981. A local version of these came out with the local version of Twinkie Sponge Cakes. They were made by Irvine's company, who licensed the recipe and the concept for Twinkies from Hostess in the US. And the set included 6 stickers featuring imagery from The Empire Strikes Back. So we'll take a fun look at those stickers and the story behind them on the SWNZ YouTube channel. Just want to hit on a couple of local store reports. Again, not too many of these because things have just been a little bit quiet over the holiday period, but a couple of things that are worth mentioning. The Art of Star Wars Visions, a hardcover book, 192 pages long, is up for pre-order now at Mighty Ape. I know that amongst the local community, there are a lot of fans specifically of Star Wars Visions, but in the absence of a lot of collectibles or additional material to this, I think anything and everything related to the series is worth mentioning. So this long hardcover look at the art and development of Star Wars Visions should have a lot of new and interesting material for fans of that Disney Plus streaming series. We mentioned that there's a whole lot of new Book of Boba Fett and related products coming through EB Games last podcast. One that I just wanted to highlight that we've mentioned on SWNZ recently are the kitchen small appliances. There's a Boba Fett waffle maker and a Mandalorian toasted sandwich maker priced at $79 each, and they're available to purchase in store or online. And finally, if you're looking to put something on the wall but want something a little bit more developed than just a poster or a laminated poster, there are a number of framed art prints at Mighty Ape in the $35 to $40 price range. There's about 10 different styles, including classic posters and more recent Mandalorian imagery. And these are up to 48 by 33 centimeters in scale. So these are quite a fun way to put something on a wall that just looks a little bit more tidy than a standard paper poster. Okay, the Book of Boba Fett episode 1. It's been a little bit of a while before we've been able to talk about a Disney Plus series in an SWNZ podcast, so we're quite looking forward to being able to really dig into this for this weekend moving forward. Episode 1 was written by Jon Favreau and directed by Robert Rodriguez, and it basically had 2 stories in parallel. A lot of this episode was visual exposition, breaking down the events immediately following Return of the Jedi, and in parallel they were talking about a series of events taking place a few years beyond that, at which point in time Boba Fett and Fennec Shand are trying to establish their position in the Mos Espa underworld. So Boba Fett barely escapes from the Sarlacc that swallowed him, only to be left for dead by Jawas, who stole his armor and jetpack. He's captured by Tusken Raiders and makes an attempt to escape, but is unable to fight out of their encampment. In parallel, we see storytelling years later. Fett and Fennec Shand have taken control of the Hutt's criminal empire on Tatooine, including Jabba's palace. They're in the process of receiving tribute from business owners and other gangs, and they've managed to gain the services of 2 Gamorrean guards, who I'm sure are going to be interesting characters moving forward. Fennec Shand and the guards visit the Sanctuary, a cantina in Mos Espa run by a Twi'lek, Garsa Whip, who also offers tribute. On their way out from the cantina, though, they're ambushed by assassins who they manage to fight off, one of whom is captured after a pursuit across the rooftops. But during the encounter, Boba Fett is badly wounded and has to be taken back to the palace and returned to his Bacta tank. Flashback to Boba Fett's time with the Tusken Raiders. Fett and a Rodian captive are digging for water in the desert and they're attacked by a large sand creature that kills the Rodian. Boba Fett kills the creature, saves the Tusken adolescent, and gains a degree of respect from the rest of the Tuskens because of this feat. So overall, quite a different style of storytelling to what we saw, particularly in relation to episode 1 of The Mandalorian. Like I say, a lot of exposition, a lot of just unpacking of things that have taken place, and interesting to tell it in sort of two parallel streams. So no major reveals or surprises. We pretty much expected this to pan out in terms of, we didn't know to what extent in terms of detail, but we certainly expected Boba Fett's escape from the Salak to pan out in the way that it did. And in fact, it's a story that's been told a few times before in the old expanded universe, in particular in the Marvel Star Wars comics number 81 from way back in the 80s, in an episode called Jowers of Doom, one of my favorites from that run of comics. So no Baby Yoda reveals, no Luke Skywalker reveals. That sort of stuff might be coming later in the subsequent episodes. But I enjoyed it most definitely, and it really left me waiting and wanting to see more. So I'm very much looking forward to the next episode. What's your first initial reaction?
Yeah, I was excited that they gave us a fair amount of backstory. I didn't want it to kind of just go, oh yeah, he got out of the satellite and we're moving on. It was kind of fun to sort of see that sort of all sort of played out and explained, because I know that Disney and Lucasfilm have obviously got to tread this kind of fine line between explaining things too much for the new generation of Star Wars fans and then sort of skipping it over because they know most Star Wars fans will have kind of figured it out by now. You know, they know what sort of happened. So I thought that there was all sorts of fun nods that even if it wasn't surprising, it was still fun to see, you know, like the shots inside the Sarlacc, seeing Jabba's sail barge sort of in ruins around the outside, sort of seeing the process. We know that he loses his armor at some point and finds himself with Tuskens at some point because of the storylines that we saw in The Mandalorian. Obviously, when we first meet him, he doesn't have his armor and he has a gaffy stick, so he's had some relation with the Tuskens. And somehow his armor went missing from the time he got out of the Salak to the time where we see it first with Cobb Vanth, and then he retrieves it off from the Mandalorian. So if you're a deep Star Wars fan, you probably could have connected the dots and figured out what was the most likely scenario, but it was nice to have it fully splayed out. I saw some people saying that this first episode was a bit slow or boring, but I think that's just because they needed to get through the story beats to explain the thing. So people aren't going, how did he get out? Where does armor go? And all this kind of stuff.
It was almost a prelude episode, a prologue. It was a lot of scene setting, and I think it was just necessary. They're both story threads are completely open-ended, but they really laid out the scenes in the context of where we're at.
I think if you threw in a big reveal like Baby Yoda in this first episode, it would feel sort of rammed in there too much. We've barely gotten started, and I think it would just sort of feel like a play-by-play, okay, we're just going to do the same sort of thing that we did with The Mandalorian, you know, start with the big reveal and then go from there. I think that this is definitely going to build up to something. They're not going to do a series around Boba Fett, not give us something super, super cool.
I like the variety in storytelling. I think the slow burn is actually quite a nice variation based on the other live-action material we're seeing, albeit quite brief.
It feels a little bit more like what we remember in the movies. We never started out with some massive reveal right at the start. You know, there was a build-up, you know. We don't have the climactic lightsaber fights and like right at the start of the movie, you know. We've got to sort of build up through it, and then we get to the big, you know, the big surprises, the big sort of twists and turns and things like that. So it feels a little bit more like a movie in that respect. We're sort of setting the scene, giving a bit of exposition for the people that are new here.
Because there's a lot more story. There's a surprising lack of dialogue apart from a few specific encounters, but there was a lot of scene setting. And if you break down a lot of the details that we've seen, it does tell us a lot. It tells us a lot about where Boba Fett is at in terms of his leadership, his personality, his physical capabilities, the skills he's picking up from the Tuskens. It tells us an awful lot about those things. You know, we can break those down into quite small details.
Yeah, because I thought it was really fun to see the sort of flashbacks to young Boba in the Geonosis arena just after Jango's been killed. We see some shots of Kamino. Obviously, that is his homeworld and things like that. And if you're a fan that's gone and sort of watched all of the animated series, then you would know there's a few more sort of episodes post sort of the episode two, where we see Boba sort of as a young person in his relationship with some other bounty hunters. So we get a little bit of a sort of a beginning to his personality and his story. But there is such a massive amount of time since then to where we are now that I feel like they're going to take a little bit of time to really give us a full idea of who this Boba Fett is now. You know, yeah, we're not going to get a full backstory. Obviously, we get little glimpse of his involvement with the Empire in the original trilogy, but that's only just a very small element. We don't see him speak a lot. He's there as kind of a lingering threat for a lot of the time. So we don't get his sort of inner dialogue and how is he fond of working for the Empire? Is he not having fun? Like how that all came into play. So I'm really looking forward to seeing how they sort of develop his character, because they didn't give him a lot of dialogue, but we're getting more of a feel for his character with the dialogue that we are given in the Book of Boba Fett. And because a lot of it was told in backstory, he's injured, he's imprisoned, he's not just talking to the air, there's not a lot of opportunity there for a lot of exposition. So I feel like we're going to get a little bit more talking. Plus, I think that they don't want to make him a terribly chatty person. He's got a little bit of a mystique, he sort of reserves and observes things. Obviously, we're probably going to get the most amount of dialogue between him and Fennec, sort of being his confidant, right-hand person there, which I think is going to be really fun. I'm liking all the touches and references to original trilogy things, which I was really hoping that they'd do in this one.
Yeah, well, right from the get-go, seeing Jabba's sort of throne room, party room, empty and abandoned was a really cool starting scene. Seeing the 88 droid sort of emceeing the entrance of all the tribute bringers was kind of cool. The 88 droid, also referred to as UK-2B in the credits, was voiced by Matt Berry, who we've seen in a number of different things, including IT Crowd and SpongeBob. But he was a fun addition, and I suspect because they'd bought in a talent of that level and that he was amongst the top build talents, that we're going to see more of that droid moving forward.
Yeah, he's got such a distinctive voice. I really enjoy him on the American What We Do in the Shadows production. So it's fun to see him getting involved in the Star Wars universe. It's always fun when they bring in actors and talent that you're fond of from other productions into Star Wars. So I thought that was fun. He had a distinctive voice. It didn't take too many lines of dialogue to pick up.
It's something interesting that someone pointed out online that, this is quite true when you stop and think about it. There's actually only five actors credited in the main credits and then a bunch in the secondary credits. But all five of those five main actors, Matt Berry is the youngest at age 47, because Tim's in his 60s now, and Fennec Shand, Ming-Na Wen, is in her late 50s. So it's interesting that it's such a mature cast. That's something you don't always necessarily see in an action-packed series like this. It's certainly fun for those that have been around for a while. It's those of us that have been around for a while and grown up with the original trilogy.
I think it's a whether it was intentional or not, I think it's a clever thing, because I think a lot of Boba Fett fans are going to be that slightly older generation, to be honest, that loved the mysterious character from the original trilogy era, who are going to be a little bit older now. So I think that's kind of fun, you know, sort of give them characters that they identify with, can root for, that don't feel sort of too... Because Boba Fett himself is not the youngest as we see him here, because obviously we know that he was a young boy in the Clone Wars era, so there's no way that he can be a young man. Yeah. Obviously, we don't see his helmet off in the original trilogy, but because of the way that the movies have been paced out, we know he must be a certain age by now. So I think that's kind of fun, you know, giving them sort of a bit of a realism and a grit, and, you know, because we're not dealing with force users here. We're not dealing with people with superhuman powers. They are just humans.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. The fact that Tim's a little bit older and Boba Fett's not overpowered makes him, I think they're trying to make him quite relatable in some ways, and make it interesting and impressive that he is holding power despite not necessarily, you know, having a lot of distinctly unique attributes other than determination and work ethic, so to speak. So yeah, Matt Berry voiced 88 UK-2B. Just speaking of voices, though, interesting to note that Sam Witwer apparently voiced the Rodian captive. Sam Witwer's had an involvement with Star Wars before, voicing Darth Maul in the animated form, of course, and Solo, A Star Wars Story, and also Starkiller in the video game series Force Unleashed. So fun to see them as additions to the lineup. Daniel Logan also got credited, although I don't know that he had direct involvement with this episode. They recreated the arena scenes from Attack of the Clones, basically refilmed them or used additional footage to give slightly different perspectives on those final scenes after Jango's death. So they made use of Daniel Logan's likeness, and he was credited as such. I found those flashbacks to Attack of the Clones very interesting, including the new Kamino scenes. I think in some ways that redone Kamino scene, which focused on the exterior shots of the platforms with the Slave One on the landing platform, part of that I think was to really emphasize that he grew up on a water world. So yes, he's not a big fan of a desert planet.
Yeah, because the title of this episode was called Stranger in a Strange Land. Yeah. So yeah, a sand planet like Tatooine is going to be quite foreign to him. And I also thought it was an interesting nod, because the last thing that we've watched is The Bad Batch, which finished on Kamino, where we see some of the structures being sort of bombed below the water, which was sort of, you know, a bit of a sort of gut-wrenching moment for anybody that's sort of fans of them, and watching through the eyes of the clones, seeing some of their home being destroyed and things like that. And that was one of the last sort of moments that we saw in The Bad Batch, and then getting a taste of it, it sort of links those in a sort of really subtle way. We sometimes forget that Boba is a clone. Of course, I know a lot of fans are really pulling up the idea that, well, Tim's back in action. We're going to see him as a clone. You know, is he going to run into a clone somewhere? Is he going to show up as a clone in another live action series? There's so many possibilities, because obviously Disney is keen on him, bringing him back and creating all this content.
The more I've thought about that, the more I actually really like to see Tim do a few quite distinct other characters interacting with himself.
That would be fun.
But I think that would be super interesting to see him play a character with a bit more of an established personality as well, in some ways, to see how he pulls that off. So yeah, I'm totally rooting for Tim to play Rex or another clone down the line. That would be super interesting.
Yeah, well, I haven't read any spoilers. I'm trying to stay away from spoilers from upcoming series. But for me personally, just as a guesswork, the favorite things would be to either see, like, maybe Cody or a different clone in the Kenobi series, like maybe as like a flashback or in present time. And then, of course, as Rex or one of the other sort of prominent clones with Ahsoka in that series. Now, I'm not quite sure how the timing plays out. We don't know exactly when either of these series are set and what sort of planets and scenarios we're going to have, but I would love to see Tim play a clone trooper. Obviously, he is the face of them, but sometimes when you go back and look, he didn't actually get that much screen time as the clones. There are sort of his face as some pilots. There's a couple of scenes where he has a helmet off, and it's predominantly computer generated around him. He wouldn't have realistically done that much time on set as clones. Obviously, he was cast as Jango primarily. The clones were kind of an add-on to that. But a lot of the clones, we generally see them with their helmets on, and for a large part, they were computer generated back in that era. So it'd be fun for him to kind of come back and fulfill that role in a bit more of a larger sense, like he is doing with the Boba Fett role. But yeah, there was all sorts of fun goodies in this episode.
Well, I liked
a lot of callbacks actually to the prequel era, like the Tuskens and the massive creatures that we obviously see in episode 2.
Yeah, so mixing prequel and original trilogy there. I liked the massive. I liked the fact that this Tusken tribe is distinctly different from other Tusken tribes that we've seen. I liked the colour mixes they had in their wraps and apparel, as well as a little bit more adornment with jewellery and variations in their headgear.
They do seem to be possibly a bit more of a warrior fighting race than perhaps we have seen. Their tents were very distinctly different to the tents we see Anakin when he's attacking that tribe. Obviously, there is still a brutality to the Tuskens, or the Sand People, because we see them taking prisoners but I thought it was fun that they actually gave us a specific reason for why they take, because we see Shmi tied up, but we don't really know why they took her. Mm. While we hear that the men that went to go rescue her were all killed. So we don't specifically know why she's kept captive.
They're enslaving captives, but for specific reasons. And there's also strong connotations of many, many, you know, rites of passage, rites of honor and so forth within their culture, which are often quite brutal, but at least we're sort of unpacking that into a way which makes it a little bit more understandable in some ways.
the scene where he kind of gets away from them and they're all kind of standing around, it looks like they're giving him the opportunity to earn his freedom by defeating a warrior in battle. And as we know, Boba Fett is primarily using projectile weapons, you know, blasters and things like that. So seeing him try to take on a skilled Tusken with a staff weapon, he doesn't come off the best in that scenario. But I thought it was interesting that they sort of recognized that, yeah, if you earn our respect, we might let you go. And we know, obviously, he ultimately does earn their respect in some ways because he ends up with a gaffy stick and dark robes, which I thought was interesting because I was always just a little bit puzzled why they made it look like he was wearing sort of Tusken-esque garb, but it was pretty much black. And I was like, we haven't seen that in Tuskens before. But now we see the tribe that captured him wear a lot of darker colors. Obviously, the original Sand people were very, very pale, but Jawas tend to wear dark brown robes. So we know it's not out of the question. So it was interesting to see the mix, and it gives us more of a sense of the fact that there are very distinct different tribes of Tuskens or Sand people on Tatooine. They had very different tents, very different outfits. You know, do they clash with each other? Did, you know, have they sort of evolved for different sort of landscapes across Tatooine? You know, so it's sort of interesting to see that, you know, some might be more nomadic, some might stay still and kind of harvest in the area. And it was interesting to see how the likes of the Tuskens acquire liquid or water. They've never really sort of, you know, we don't really sort of dive into that because clearly we see humans, obviously the Owen Lars with the moisture evaporators and stuff like that, but Tuskens don't seem to own tech like that as we see them depicted. So it was interesting to see that they have an organic way of finding water in a desert and environment. And it's
presumably sort of a long-standing approach to survival. I think the storytelling is actually a lot more detailed and a lot more intentional than some people have given it credit for in some ways. It's just that this happened to need to be a prelude episode, but I think it's everything there is there for a reason.
I'd kind of like to see some of it, like, I guess there'll be like a book or something like that explained, because I'm on two minds. I don't know if the little orbs that they're digging in the sand, are those plants, like sort of cactus-like ones, or are they basically like perhaps sort of eggs of the sand creature that they sort of lay in the sand? Because we know certain reptiles, like turtles and things like that, lizards, they tend to lay the eggs in the sand. So are they basically like, you know, drinking like the yolk / liquid out of an egg buried in the sand, which would explain why there is a giant creature right there if it's like been laying eggs under the sand or something. Are they just like you say, like sea urchins, or like more of like a self-contained organism, or like a cactus, some sort of, you know, desert plant that has moisture on the inside. So a minor part, but I just thought that was fascinating and just adding more lore to the Star Wars.
Yeah, so let's just talk about that sand creature for a few seconds there, because you brought it up. It jumped out at me the first second I saw it there, that it looked like Ray Harryhausen's stop motion. I said that as soon as it cropped up. And a lot of people have made that same connection. I'm sure many in the audience would have seen that online if you didn't spot it yourself. So, and I think in part it was because of the creature design, and in part it was because of the angles. There was a distinct combination of shots of the creature that didn't show its legs, which is a shortcut you often use with that sort of stop motion. And then when they did show the legs, it was sort of a full body ambulation moving forward shot that had a very, even though it's clearly digital, they had a very much a stop motion tribute feel to it. And clearly Harryhausen inspired. There's a lot of characteristics of the creature that look close to the Kraken from Clash of the Titans and so forth, but a few others as well.
Yeah, there's a certain style that you kind of see through movie monsters, things like Godzilla and dinosaur depictions. If you go and watch like really older movies where they use stop motion, the actual creature design is quite different. And so there was elements, particularly around the face, particularly sort of the muscular body, that felt like it was that sort of older design. And in a way, that sort of feels like that fits in with Star Wars very well. Obviously, a lot of the original creature designs were done in the 70s. So it sort of gives it the sort of older feel, because modern monster creatures have a slightly different feel. You know, we've got things like Stranger Things and Wrath-tars and stuff like that, that have a slightly different sort of vibe to them. It gave it a much more sort of older world, because Tatooine is where A New Hope kicks off. You know, this is where we start with Luke on the homestead and go from there. And so it sort of feels like tapping back into the sort of older references gives it an older grounded feel, which I thought was really fun. I hope we learn a lot more about this this creature. You know, I'm hoping they put out some big book, you know, behind the scenes and creature design and stuff like that, and give us a bit more information. But then, of course, on the flip side, they included some very, very modern things. We saw the Boston Dynamics robots walking down the Tatooine street, and I thought that was really, really fun. I saw some people saying, oh, they're too modern to be in Star Wars. But when you think about it, they've got fully sentient droids walking around, like 3PO. 3PO is a technology we don't have in existence yet. We don't have, you know, droids that can do what R2 can do.
And I'm pretty sure that even though they weren't real robots, they were models in terms of implementation. I'm pretty sure on Solo, in the trenches of Mimban, we saw four-legged pack droids that were very similar to the larger versions of Boston Dynamics robots. So, you know, there are precedents for that style of robot in Star Wars lore. But it's just interesting that they took that shortcut of using, you know, real capable robots to represent in real galaxy far, far away droids.
Yeah, I thought that was a really fun touch. And of course, we saw some really classic astromechs inside the cantina scene.
The cantina scene was awesome. There's a ton of astromechs there. Right from the way, from the moment they walked in the door, everything was just so much to look at, trying to check out the background and trying to listen to everything as well. The music that was playing sounded familiar for a moment there, and it was actually a recomposition of the original trilogy Star Wars A New Hope cantina theme. It's been referred to as Cantina Latina, which is a variation on John Williams' music. It's actually performed by, the strings were performed by Robert Rodriguez, the director, who we know as a guitar player, which was fun. Robert Rodriguez also played the Trandoshan in the tribute scenes early on, so some really interesting details and trivia associated with that.
Yeah, the other droid that stood out for me in that cantina scene was the droid that formerly piloted the Star Tours ride in the Disney parks. Fans might know him now as DJ Rex in Ogre's Cantina because he is no longer in the Star Tours ride, but he is a very distinctive droid, and he, if you've ever been to Star Tours or know that character, he stands out very, very clearly. So we don't know if this is just another droid of his type or one, or whether it's supposed to be him.
Supposed to relate to Batu and DJ Rex, yes.
Yeah, so definitely, that was fun.
Definitely an RX series droid, which was a fun insert to actually have in live action in that way.
I loved seeing the Twi'lek character as being the proprietor of the cantina rather than being a servant. Yeah, so I think that's fun. And obviously now with the poster reveals, we know that she's going to have a little bit more of a prominent role than just a background character. Obviously, they cast a well-known actress, Jennifer Beals. So even from the get-go, I was pretty sure that this character is going to have a little bit more of a storyline than just sort of a passing character. Yeah. So well, I'm really intrigued to see where she's going to go.
That's a significant point, because I think both of the storytelling threads that we've seen so far were left open-ended, and I think they're going to continue in parallel. I think, as I say, they're scene setting, so everything we've seen so far, we're going to see more of. We're going to see more of that. All those characters, the Majordomo to the Mayor, I think we're going to find out who the Mayor is. Could be the Ithorian we've seen in the trailers. Could be someone else, but I liked that character, that Twi'lek character. We're going to see more of Garza Fwip, the Twi'lek from the Sanctuary. We're going to see more of the Tuskens, and we know that for a few solid reasons. Because the story was open-ended, the closing scene was, in fact, in the Tusken encampment, and there's material from the teasers that we haven't yet seen. But some of the actors involved with those Tuskens have commented on social media that they're going to be doing more down the line, and that's not a spoiler. I think that's pretty much what we would expect.
I especially think that because of the way we see Boba Fett sort of fail at his fight with the Tusken warrior, and then if we think back to his appearance on Tython, where he just annihilates stormtroopers with a gaffy stick, I'm really hoping we see him spend some time recuperating and then becoming really proficient at staff combat with the Tuskens, that they're not just like let him go, that they actually kind of take him in and teach him.
Well, he's in a weakened state at the point where he's tied to the stake. I think now that he's gained their respect, they're going to feed him and give him a little more freedom to develop and draw him into their culture in some ways.
Yeah, because we see that it's interesting that with the receiving line that he does and coming across the mayor's servant there, that this isn't going to be just an easy transition, that he can't just sort of take over from Bib Fortuna and everyone's going to shower him with sort of praise and respect as being the crime lord. Obviously, Boba Fett is somebody to be feared and respected, but we're going to have to see, he's going to have to like show it. So I think that's interesting, because no sooner is he walking down the streets that a gang attacks. And in the credits, they are referred to as a Nightwind assassin. Yeah. So we've got a gang there. We also see when he is spying on the homestead with the Tuskens that we see a homestead being attacked by what appears to be a different gang that then spray paints a sort of a gang symbol on the outside of the homestead. So I think we're really setting up the fact that there's a tension and a sort of a fine balance between all the different gangs and factions on Tatooine, and he's going to have to sort of somehow find a balance. We obviously see in the trailers that he's calling in the Trandoshans to have a bit of a meeting, and he's sort of,
Aqualish, yeah.
Yeah. I thought it was really fun seeing the Trandoshan offering a Wookiee pelt. It's not mentioned as a Wookiee pelt, but I think if you're familiar with the rivalry between Wookiees and Trandoshans, it is pretty clear that that's what it is. They maybe didn't say that that's what it was so that they don't scare kids into thinking it's a dead Chewbacca or something. But I thought that that was a fun touch. I liked the way that they sort of subtly put all the coins and credits into Boba Fett's helmet. Like there's these little touches. People are like, you know, trying to buy his favor, you know, making a point to say, yep, we're on your side, you know, let's get back to business and stuff like that. So I'm just really excited to see, you know, how people are going to sort of serve him, the others that are going to come up against him. This is going to set up a really interesting, it'll be interesting to see if we really stay completely on Tatooine, if the adventures are going to take us off world. We do see some starships in those early trailers, but they're all sort of flying over what looks to be either Tatooine or Mos Espa specifically. Yeah, so it'll be really interesting to see.
That's an interesting point. We've talked a long time ago about Obi-Wan Kenobi series and how that would actually feel better if he traveled a little bit in terms of his adventures. But this one here, I actually wouldn't mind if this one was localized to Tatooine. They're a little bit cheaper in terms of production because a lot of they're working with stagecraft and the volume, but I think there's a lot of physical sets, those Mos Espa alleyways. I think there's some distinct physical sets here, so the production becomes a bit cheaper if it is localized to Tatooine. I wouldn't mind that.
Because in terms of the wider lore, we know that the Hutt Cartel is a very powerful sort of gang organization that controls a lot of territories. But when Jabba dies, it's not another Hutt that takes its place. It was Bib Fortuna that took over. So we think that maybe the Hutt Cartel doesn't see Tatooine as particularly useful to them anymore. Maybe it's too far on the Outer Rim, or for whatever reasons, they don't take over. So it's now left to the local gangs and things like that. So I think that presents a really interesting dynamic, that there's been sort of a real power shift, that it isn't the sort of wider sort of several systems cartel controlling Tatooine. It's going to be down to more local forces. So that does sort of perhaps hint at the fact that Boba Fett's going to be dealing with much more local stories and local conflict.
In previous podcasts, we talked about, you know, if Hutts get involved, will we see Nar Shaddaa or Hutta or so forth, you know, in the wider underworld of the wider galaxy. But at this point, I wouldn't mind just, there's a lot going on Tatooine, and we can just stick with that for a little while, and maybe that the story just progresses and the season closes with looking forward to expansion beyond Tatooine, and we move beyond that for subsequent seasons, because I definitely want subsequent seasons of this.
I do. Yeah. I'm really hoping that maybe Lucasfilm's being a bit cautious and they're not sort of announcing a series as being an ongoing series until the final episode's rolled and they can see the numbers and see, you know, how much merch was sold and all that kind of stuff. Clearly, we're seeing that with Visions. They didn't have any merch ready to go when that thing launched. A couple of t-shirts and that was it. But t-shirts can be pretty much print on demand. You're not going to lose money if they don't sell. But now we're seeing action figures and books and things like that coming out now that they know that it was obviously a success on the back end. Enough people watched it. Enough people ranked it highly on review sites that I don't know if we'll get a season two of that, but at least it was enough to make merchandise from it to, you know, make a bit more money off of it. But
some of the developers have definitely said they would want to be.
Yes.
At what point that may or may not get greenlit, we don't yet know, but I don't think that's inconceivable.
Yeah. I think that after, you know, when Lucasfilm announced, we're going to be doing a movie a year, and then things kind of got upended and stuff like that, I think they're maybe treading a little bit more cautiously now. But honestly, this is set up for being a really fun series. I like the Boba Fett we're getting this first taste of. I think it's going to be really fun. I like that little moment where Tim says to the Massive, "No hard feelings, mate." Yeah. There was just that little touch of Kiwi sort of note there, which was fun because he doesn't say a lot in this. So that was kind of fun. We're getting a little bit of his sort of style coming through. So I'm really hoping we get dived down. I know that there was an interview where Tim reference that we might even sort of shed a tear, and that we're sort of going to get to, you know, so I'm really looking forward to seeing where this might go. You know, there's all sorts of ways, and it's so sort of unknown at this point. We've kind of, the first episode covered what we kind of expected, no big surprises. We kind of guessed what it was going to be. If they've given us like something out of Left Wing, I think it would have felt too artificial, like a surprise for the sake of a surprise. I don't think it would have fit the storytelling that needed to be told in that first episode. But well, yeah, I think we'll really hit the ground running, and I'm super looking forward to tomorrow night's episode.
Yep, likewise, not very far to wait now. So on that note, I think we'll wrap things up and look forward to this upcoming episode on Wednesday this week. And we'll be talking about that around about this time next week. So that's about it for today's installment. I guess we're done doing talking. We've done a lot of talking, but if you've got any thoughts on the topics we discussed today, we're definitely keen to hear them. Leave your comments on the YouTube page or our website page for this podcast. But also thank you for tuning in. We appreciate you taking your time to listen to us share our passion for Star Wars. Stay tuned to our website, swnz.co.nz, for Star Wars news for New Zealanders, and another podcast episode next week and every Tuesday. Don't forget, you can jump on over to either our Facebook group or the SWNZ message boards to discuss all the latest Star Wars news with other Kiwi fans. We'll also be discussing episodes of The Book of Boba Fett on our personal Twitch channel immediately after the screening of an episode each week, and we'll be covering spoilers for that. There'll be a link below that you can subscribe for notifications. Kia ora, kia noho, haumaru. Thank you for listening and stay safe.
Tūro Hawaiki. May the Force be with you.